Hello, and welcome to show number 2606 of Eyes on Success, a weekly program empowering the visually impaired with expert advice, personal stories, and the latest in technology and accessibility. I'm Nancy Goodman Torpy.
And I'm Pete Torpy. And talking of personal stories, as Nancy mentioned in the intro, this is a personal story.
Seeing as this week includes Valentine's Day, we thought this would be an opportunity to do another episode about meeting and dating. But this time's a little bit different. Instead of interviewing another couple about how they met and how their relationship evolved, we'll be talking about ourselves. But first, for the tip of the week. This week's tip is follow your heart. If you find somebody who you truly love, who's truly your soulmate, go for it. You never know what might happen. We first met in 1982, which, if you haven't done the math, was 43 years ago, and we are very happy that we followed our hearts, and we are still happily married.
It seems to have worked out for us, although at the time, some of our friends thought it was kind of reckless.
From what I hear, some of Pete's friends were placing bets on how long I would stay with him, but they all lost the bet.
Ha!
You are listening to Eyes on Success. 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 Success.
People often ask how we met, and they usually assume that we met at work because we were both working in corporate research at Xerox Corporation in Rochester, New York. And we would have met there, but we met elsewhere first.
In graduate school, it turned out that each of us independently, attending graduate schools in different parts of the country, had learned to do contra dancing, which is a form of American traditional dancing similar to square dancing, except it's lines of people facing each other and partners always switching with other people.
And it's very well suited not only to scientific types because it involves lots of patterns, but it's also well suited to blind people because if you put yourself in the right place, the other people with whom you're supposed to be interacting will be able to make up the last couple of inches of a gap and touch your hand if you need to do an allemande left or whatever, if you need to actually touch each other. But we've known a number of blind people who've been quite good at contra dancing, so don't be shy about that.
And it was a lot of fun. So I was actually part of the contra dance crowd in Rochester before Nancy showed up in Rochester. I was there for several years. And I heard that a new person, female, PhD, was being hired at Xerox. And let me tell you, there aren't many women in research, especially back in those days.
And Pete was so sweet. He sent me a copy of the schedule of the Rochester Contra Dance group through interoffice mail, which for any of you who can remember way back, those were those big yellow envelopes with the holes in them and the string that you tied around. And he stuck a little note to it that said, "When a new dancer comes to town, you can't hide for long." Well, of course, I had already found the dance crowd, but I thought that was so sweet.
And the reason I knew that our new hire was a dancer was I was at a dance camp that summer where a friend of mine said, "Gee, I know this woman from Chicago who just got a job at Xerox, and she's a contra dancer. You should look her up when she comes to town." So that's what I did with that interoffice mail note.
And last year when we went to Chicago on vacation, we met up with Katie and spent the afternoon with her. It was terrific. So thank you, Katie.
As Nancy indicated, we would have probably met anyway, since we both lived in what was then the area where all the young professionals lived and commuted to Xerox. We were just several blocks away. And then it turned out we were in the same carpool. And then in addition, at work, both of our managers reported to the same person. So our groups were actually reasonably close. We would have known of each other's work.
In addition to working in neighboring groups and being in the same carpool, we really pretty much got to know each other mostly through the contra dance group. And at first we became good friends and then realized we were soulmates. And then I had to unload the previous boyfriend. And eventually we started dating and got married 11 months after we met.
But our first date was actually in January when I closed on a house I had just bought.
Yeah, when Pete showed me that house and we weren't even dating yet, I thought somebody had taken terrible advantage of this poor blind guy who couldn't see the holes in the downspouts and the peeling paint and all the other problems with the house. But eventually, over the years, we fixed it up and it was a great house by the time we sold it.
So anyway, our first date was in January and we were married the next July. Things happened pretty quickly. We wouldn't recommend that our kids do that, but somehow it worked for us. We were really good buddies and things just evolved pretty quickly. So people wonder sometimes if someone is blind, you know, who would want to marry a blind person? And so I'm curious, Nancy, what did you think at the time? It was one thing to have a friend who was blind, but it was another thing yet again to think about marrying someone who was blind.
Well, you know, the way you put that question was almost verbatim what my mother said to me when I announced that I was going to marry you. She said, "Why would you decide to marry a blind person?" And I said, "Well, actually, I decided to marry Pete because I love him and he happens to be blind." And, you know, Pete at the time had demonstrated that he was so independent and so capable. The fact that he couldn't see really didn't make a big difference to anything we did together. He didn't drive, he didn't do power tools, and otherwise, it really didn't make a big difference. I was very confident that, you know, we could make it work. We're both pretty determined. We're both pretty strong-willed, goodness knows. And I was confident, you know, Pete had worked out most of the blindness stuff already at that point. He'd been blind for decades. And I figured we could do it together.
Well, as you pointed out, for me, blindness was just, I happened not to see, but I could do anything else I wanted to do. And in fact, in that old ratty house that I bought because I couldn't afford my new grand piano plus a well-finished house.
Plus, don't forget the engagement ring.
Oh, the engagement ring. Yeah, that brought me down to nearly my last dollar. But anyway, in that old ratty house that I had bought, you and I did quite a lot of work on our own, putting up wallpaper and painting. We'd spend late nights doing all these things to fix up the house. We actually hired some people to do the major work, but it was kind of fun. And then you made other accommodations for me, like when we were contra dancing.
Oh, well, yes. Once we became an item, it turned out that I liked to dress in ways that Pete could see it. He had a little bit of vision back then. So I would make a point usually of wearing bright, solid colors, because if anything had a pattern, that would all just blur together for him into one drab mess. So for that first date, I bought 7 yards of purple silk and I made a terrific dress. But I also made a couple of dresses for contra dancing and they were very bright and they contrasted with the room and life was good because Pete could find me. And then the dance group moved to another building with a different color walls, and I faded into the background, and that was that for those dresses.
But talking about accommodations, some of it wasn't so bad. There are always certain accommodations that have to be made when you're living with someone like me who can't see. But fortunately, you are a very organized person. For me, being blind, everything in the house needed to be in a specific place. And fortunately, Nancy was very good about that. I've heard of many other couples where the sighted person isn't so good about putting things back in their place, and then the blind person has some real difficulties. But Nancy was pretty good about that, so that wasn't a big accommodation.
Well, you know, in my mind, the biggest adaptation I had to make was that before getting together with you, Pete, I used to leave my shoes on the floor wherever I took them off. And it really didn't matter because I could see them and walk around them. And that was not good with a blind person in the house. And so I learned by stages. First, I learned don't leave them in the middle of a walking path, put them against the wall. And now they're in the closet. I never leave my shoes out, but that was a big deal having to retrain myself.
But there's also little accommodations, you guiding me places, driving me places. You know, if we went on a vacation, I couldn't give you a break from driving to drive a little bit myself if you were tired. And those are just certain accommodations people have to make. And it wasn't so hard.
That is an issue. We have some friends who drive 10 or 15 hours in a day, and we never plan days like that because I just don't have the stamina. So, you know, it takes us longer to get somewhere, but we work it out. Pete is also not such a good navigator, but now that we have GPS, that's no longer an issue. But back in the days of paper maps, that was, you know, if I needed to check the map, I'd have to pull off the highway and look at the map because my navigator couldn't see it.
There were other situations where it wasn't so good not being able to see. I remember the time that I called 911 when Nancy thought she was dying of a heart attack. And I called 911 and they asked me, is she turning blue? And I said, well, I don't know. It turned out in the end that she had some muscle cramps from some yoga classes she was doing. But it just goes to show you that sometimes there really is an advantage of being able to see.
But the dispatcher rolled with it when Pete informed her that he couldn't tell whether I was turning blue. And she was cool. She kept her calm and handled the whole situation and eventually sent over an ambulance. And they could tell for themselves that I wasn't turning blue. And fortunately, like Pete said, it turned out it was just muscle cramps. But it was right where my heart was, and it was pretty unnerving at the time.
I was thinking when we started having a family that when we had our first baby that, gee, maybe I ought to put some bells on them so when they're crawling around the floor, I don't squash them. Turned out not to be necessary.
Yeah, the older one is 40 now, and she's still making noise. Not a problem. So we did find ways of having fun together that took into account your blindness. So I had always enjoyed riding a bicycle as a kid. Well, when we got together, we got a tandem bicycle.
In fact, in the early days, we used to take our daughter Allison, when she was just maybe two or so, on the back of our tandem. So the three of us, one of us was mostly asleep in the back carrier, but that was a lot of fun.
Well, as I recall, we'd go out on the bike, we'd get a babysitter to watch the one kid who was tiny, and we'd put the other kid on the back of the bike. We'd go out, do half a bike ride, come back, swap kids, and then do the other half of the bike ride. And of course, each kid would fall asleep on the back of the bike, but they just really enjoyed it somehow anyway, as did we.
In fact, when they got older, we bought a second tandem, and we used to go on tandem rides with the kids. They would be on one tandem, and we'd be on the other, and we'd cycle through the countryside of Rochester. It was a lot of fun.
Another fun story that is basically an accommodation we made because Pete couldn't see was that our son, Brian, when he was about 10, wanted to play on the same baseball team as his best friend, Steve. And the rules were, in order to get your kid on the same team as some other kid not in the family, at least one parent of each kid had to coach. And so when the organizers called up and tried to talk Pete into coaching, he declined. And the guy kept saying, well, you know, your kid can't be on his best friend's team unless you or your wife coaches. And so I wound up coaching the baseball team, about which I know nothing. But Brian got to play with Steve, and that worked out nicely.
But we had a lot of fun. I mean, we used to take our tandem back and forth to work. That's how we'd commute to work most of the time when we worked at Xerox.
when we were both working, we took our jobs very seriously. We worked very hard and we took great pride in the quality work we did. But we managed to find some time to have fun during the day. And usually that was over lunch. And Pete had this group of guys that he would have lunch with every day. And I would show up maybe once every week or so. And, you know, we'd just chat about common interests. And of course, every year when I would have a giftable event, whether it was my birthday or the holidays, Pete would ask the guys what to get for me. And one of them, Dale, a particularly nice guy, would recommend the next tool I needed. And then he would go off and buy it for me and give it to Pete, and Pete would pay him back.
It was either a C-clamp or a drill or, you know, something not every woman might want, but Nancy would.
Oh, I loved the digital multimeter, the cordless screwdriver. It was terrific.
And then after Xerox, when we retired, we got into lots of other fun activities with our friends that you might not expect blind people to do. And now our kids are all grown up, and we get to play with the grandkids. And it's very different, again. But it's interesting how young kids are so open to people with differences. They barely know that I'm blind. I mean, they accommodate my blindness. When I show up there at their house, they say, oh, let's play Braille Uno. And we'll all gather around and do that. And I'll still throw a football with them out in the yard, and they just know they have to yell so I know where to throw the football. And it's not a big deal. If only adults were like that.
So at this point, we have two grandsons and two step-grandsons all in one house. And when this show airs, they will be 11, 10, 9, and 8, plus a dog and a cat. So it's pretty lively in that house. And then our daughter has two dogs who are just as energetic as all of the little boys. But we have a lot of fun with all of them. And it's been interesting watching the grandkids internalize the concept of grandpa not being able to see, because frankly, it's kind of an odd concept unless you've lived with it one way or another. So our kids, when they grew up, there was a person in the house all the time who couldn't see. And so they understood you just had to act a little bit differently with daddy. You wanted to hand him a toy, you had to actually hand him the toy. You couldn't just be across the room and assume he would come get it. But the grandkids, they don't live with grandpa day to day. They see him every couple of months. And it's been interesting watching them understand that this person can't see.
Even before they could talk, they understood that. There was one of our grandkids who wouldn't hold any adult's hand. And somehow he would just come over to me, grab my hand, and drag me where he wanted me to be. And it wasn't a big issue. Now it's a big thrill and an honor to hold grandpa's hand and guide him around. Everybody wants to guide me. So I get four kids clamoring to guide grandpa.
So in addition to playing and having fun, we also, as we mentioned, had careers in corporate research at Xerox. We actually did some very similar things, although we never really worked on the same project. But even before retiring, and certainly since, we've done a lot of volunteer work together. Probably the first big thing like that that we did was we volunteered with the Xerox Science Consultant Program for 25 years. And boy, was that gratifying. We'd go into the local public school with a lesson plan and a box full of equipment that, you know, the schools couldn't come up with a Van de Graaff generator or a tank of liquid nitrogen or any of this other stuff that we brought in. And we'd do hands-on science lessons with the kids. And after the second or third session, we'd walk in the door and these kids would say, the science guys are here. And, you know, to hear their enthusiasm, if all we taught them was that science could be fun and they would learn the concepts later, that was worth it.
That was very rewarding, and it was interesting to see how receptive kids are at that age to science and those ideas. By the time they get older, all of a sudden, science is a geeky thing, and no one's interested anymore. But we didn't expect them all to become scientists, but it's good to understand some scientific concepts since there's so much technology in our lives these days.
It also did not escape our attention that in addition to teaching the kids some science concepts, maybe even some science facts, and building their enthusiasm for science, that between the two of us, we were also setting an example that it was okay for a woman to be a scientist, and it was okay for a person with a disability to become a scientist. And at the end of each year, we did what we somewhat irreverently referred to as Pete's Blind Act.
And during that demonstration, I would bring in some of the tools I used at work, my speech synthesizers, Braille displays, slate and stylus, and then I would show them how I did my work and how I lived daily life. And it was great to see the questions that the kids would ask, because they were totally unabashed. They would ask questions like, how do you tie your shoes? How do you brush your teeth?
And of course, by the time we got to that part of the year, we had been coming in every couple of weeks teaching them science lessons, and they had all absorbed the concept that Pete could do anything anybody else could do quite nicely, thank you, except maybe he needed a little help getting around the room and he'd walk around with his cane and occasionally hit a table, but he could answer all of their questions. And so they had really internalized the concept that his only issue was he couldn't see. He could think, he could explain, he could do the science just fine. And so it was great at that point to give them the opportunity to ask him all of these other questions they might have been thinking about all year.
So that was almost like a career for us. And then after we retired, we did some more interesting things. One of the first things we did after retirement was to get a bunch of our retired colleagues together and work on habitat houses. And when Nancy first said, let's do habitat, I said, wait a minute, I'm blind.
And I said, but that's ridiculous. You've been doing home fix-it projects around our house. Why can't you do it on somebody else's house? And our friends and our daughter, who at the time was working full-time for Habitat for Humanity through an AmeriCorps program, said, but Dad's going to get injured if there's all of these unskilled, untrained strangers working in this construction site with you. And I said, well, I can fix that. So we rounded up a half a dozen of our friends, because they only let small teams work on site at a time. And so they all knew Pete. We knew they were all pretty competent at home fix-it projects and construction projects. And every Thursday, we would show up with our friends and we'd work on habitat houses. And it was, again, very gratifying. It was fun. It was productive. It was useful. And we kept it up for a couple of years until they laid us off because they had too many volunteers.
But that didn't stop us from contributing to our community in other ways. And that leads into how we actually got involved in doing this podcast. We had volunteered on the recommendation of a friend of ours to help with the fund drive at our local NPR station. So there I was with Nancy's laptop computer answering phones and taking pledge drive requests. And everybody was really interested to see how a blind man was going to take all these pledges. And eventually, one of the station managers came in and she came to us later on and said, geez, it looks like, you know, you guys are really good with technology. You talk well. How about if you help out in our radio reading service?
So I actually volunteered through the radio reading service as one of the readers, and I would come in every week or two and I would read from the local newspaper, either the news section or arts. I tried to avoid sports because I couldn't pronounce any of the names and I know nothing about sports. But after a while of that, and Pete had done some work helping out, they had a blind soundboard engineer who needed his screen reader updated in order for the station to update the software they were using. And so Pete helped out with that. And then the station manager said, well, geez, you know, why don't you guys do your own show? And so that was the origin of Eyes on Success, which at the beginning was called Viewpoints until we found out somebody else had trademarked the name. And it's been over 15 years.
So it's interesting to have these several different almost careers. We were at Xerox, each of us, for about 25 years, plus or minus a little bit. And we did that Xerox science consultant thing with the elementary school kids for 25 years. And now we've been doing this show for over 15 years. There's lots of things to keep people busy, whether they're being paid for it or not.
So if you add up those numbers, they come to a very big number, but there was a lot of overlap. So we haven't really been doing that many years consecutively. But we've had a lot of fun working together, playing together. We still love each other, I think.
Ooh. And would you do it over again?
I would. I would absolutely do it over again.
As would I.
You know, at our first anniversary, I remember you asking me if I would marry you again now that it had been a year. And I remember saying I would, but with more confidence. Because frankly, we hadn't known each other all that long when we got married. But I think, you know, we've grown together, we've stayed together, we've raised a family together, we've done volunteer projects together, and, you know, we're an item.
And now we're living here out in sunny Colorado with the hiking trails and the gorgeous weather and the mountains, and it's like being in heaven. It's okay. Anyway, as you can tell, it certainly worked out, despite what some of our friends and relatives thought when we first got together. And we've had lots of fun times, lots of fun experiences, and it's been wonderful, eh?
Sure has been.
In today's show, we told you about our meeting and dating story. And if you look in the show notes for this episode, which is episode 2606, we'll have links to a number of episodes in which we talked about meeting and dating stories of other people. We'll also have a link to another episode where we interviewed many of the people in our lives about living with a blind man. We talked to my mother, my sister, Nancy's parents, who really weren't so eager for their daughter to marry a blind man. And it was very interesting to get the reactions of all these people and their various perspectives on living with and or knowing a blind person.
Well, my parents warmed up to the idea after some large number of years.
Yeah, only about 15 or 20.
We also tried to interview our kids about what it had been like growing up with a blind father. And when we posed the question, there was dead silence. They're like, he was just dad, you know. And he couldn't see, but that was just life.
They were speechless. It was kind of funny.
Yeah. So that was a really interesting episode that we hope you'll go back and listen to.
So look for those links.
That's it for this week's show. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about the various services provided by the Chicago Lighthouse. Chicago Lighthouse specialists provide assistive technology and personalized guidance for people adapting to vision loss. We'll talk with provider Patrick Andrade and patient Pat Cosmeral about tools, training, remote support, and the essential resources that many of the ophthalmologists never mention, but that can make daily life far more manageable.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, available wherever you get your podcasts.
For show notes, resources, and more information, visit our website at eyesonsuccess.net.
Thank you for being part of our community. Until next time, I'm Peter Torpy.
And I'm Nancy Goodman Torpy. Thank you for listening.